Behind the kingdom of wisdom lies the energy of intelligence, behind the divine world lies the energy of intuition, and behind the kingdom of bliss lies the energy of memory. It must of course be understood that all energies are present on each plane of existence, but that the energy mentioned here in connection with each plane of existence is the one that controls and characterizes the plane in question. As living beings, having passed the six kingdoms mentioned here, go into a new plant kingdom, a new animal kingdom and so on, but of far greater dimensions and of a more elevated nature than the previous kingdoms, this passage or the evolution of the living beings can be further divided into certain great sections. Each of these will thus consist of the previously mentioned six planes of existence. The living beings are thus in an eternally continuing passage forwards and upwards towards greater and greater heights in love, harmony and beauty in the vast kingdom of the Godhead. Chapter 11, The Spiral Zones. In the previous chapter the reader became acquainted with the fact that the living being's experience of life takes the form of a passage forwards and upwards through an infinitely continuing succession of planes of existence, and that these planes of existence are identical with the total substance, material or energy of the universe. Furthermore, it has been shown in the same chapter that, owing to the particular organization of this energy, the planes of existence appear in the form of six different categories, of which the first is known as the plant kingdom, the second as the animal kingdom, the third as the human kingdom and so on. In the course of evolution all living beings without exception pass through these six planes of existence in an ever-ascending repetition towards perfection. Evolution can therefore be likened to an eternal staircase of which each individual plane of existence constitutes a step, and six such steps constitute a greater step, which I have expressed as a spiral zone. The terrestrial human being thus finds himself in such a spiral zone. This spiral zone with the three zones directly above and the three zones directly below together constitute an inseparable interplay. As this interplay is in turn an unshakable vital necessity for the being in question, it is no coincidence that the basic energies appear in spiral zones. The experience of life of every living being is thus determined by seven spiral zones, that is, an interplay of 42 planes of existence. It will therefore be understandable that I cannot go into detail here but must refer the reader to Livetsbog, the Book of Life. I will, however, point out that the underlying spiral zones are populated by microscopic beings whose planes of existence manifest themselves in our organisms, among other places, while the beings of the spiral zones above are of a macrocosmic nature and provide, in the form of the universe, the organism within which we ourselves behold the light of day or live and move and have our being. Chapter 12, The Eye of a Living Being. In order to get even the slightest insight into the fate of mankind, the fact that energy does not constitute everything that exists must be brought to the reader's knowledge, there is yet another reality, which is not the least important at that. This reality is identical with that which experiences life. Is there then something that experiences life? Yes, there is no fact whatsoever greater than this. But this something cannot be identical with energy, since energy is the same as vibration, and vibration is the same as movement, and movement in turn is in its very nature a lifeless reality. It has no senses, no organs, and cannot therefore experience anything whatsoever. What does a gust of wind know about a waterfall? And what does the falling of a drop of rain know about the swinging of a pendulum? Absolutely nothing, as a movement cannot experience something, though something can experience movement. As energy in the absolute sense is the same as substance, nothing whatsoever that appears as identical to substance can be identical to the experiencing something. As every single object, in order to be able to affect the senses directly, must be identical to energy, substance or matter, the above mentioned something is not to be found on any of the six planes of existence. The planes of existence consist, as we know, of energy. When we therefore nonetheless witness the fact that these planes are populated by immeasurable hosts of realities that we call living beings, these realities will in no way whatsoever be identical to the experiencing something itself. The above-mentioned realities constitute certain specific combinations of the basic energies. We call these combinations organisms or bodies. Through the analysis of these bodies, we come to the conclusion that even the smallest, hair-fine details constitute tools or instruments planned and constructed to fulfill particular purposes. They thus constitute realities that have come into existence on the basis of previous thinking. Every such body has had a beginning and will have an end when it has fulfilled its mission or the purpose for which it was constructed. As these bodies, in the cosmic sense, thus constitute created realities, they are proof of the fact that the above-mentioned living something really exists. If one is not willing to accept the bodies as a proof of the existence of this something, one is forced to admit that these bodies must have created themselves. But, since in those fields where the terrestrial human being has his greatest insight into creation, namely within that area where he himself is able to create, one has never in any case whatsoever witnessed that a thing has created itself, it would be quite contrary to the laws of logic to assert that the above mentioned bodies have come into existence by themselves. This is an assertion analogous to the claim that a machine, a house, a grand piano or anything else whatsoever within the area of human creation has come into existence by itself. And just as this assertion is against the fact, so every declaration that aims at acknowledging bodies as having created themselves will be against the actual fact and thereby unreal or abnormal. It is thus a fact that the living something exists. And people have also, even if in many cases unconsciously, expressed this by the term the I. So when an individual says, I saw, I felt, I spoke and so on, this I is a term for the living something. It was thus not the eyes of the being in question that saw, it was not its mouth that spoke, it was not its body that felt, it was rather the eye that saw by means of the eyes, that spoke by means of the mouth and that felt by means of the organism. If this living something were not present behind the organism, there would be no difference between a living being and a corpse. A corpse is an organism that has been cut off from the living something that has created and used it. As the above mentioned something is thus not a created reality, it can never have had a beginning but has existed eternally. And since it is not vibration or energy, it is not subject to change and will therefore be eternally unchangeable, nor can it ever come to an end. As the same something is identical to the I, or what in a living being experiences life, and as this something is not created, having neither beginning nor end, then it becomes obvious that the same being's experience of life is everlasting. All living beings are thus immortal. As the living something is not a created thing and does not consist of energy or substance, it is beyond every form of analysis except this, that it is the source of the energy, for it is this that experiences the energies and not vice versa. To express the above mentioned something by a particular descriptive term can thus occur only on the basis of an illusion. For if we say that this something is large or small, that it is yellow or green, that it is evil or good and so on, all such terms will be terms only for a particular release of energy or created realities and cannot possibly be an expression of the living something. This something, the I or that which experiences life in every being, is and will thus be in all eternity a nameless reality above and beyond all phenomena and manifestations. It appears in existence connected to an organism as a living being. Chapter 13, The Mother Energy, the Superconsciousness and the Subconsciousness. As previously mentioned, the I possesses an organism. An organism constitutes a partly eternal and partly created life-promoting instrument connected to the I. By virtue of this instrument, the I can create the release and interaction of the basic energies, the reactions of which become identical with the experience of life. I have expressed the eternal part of the I's instrument for experiencing and manifesting life as the superconsciousness of the living being. To this superconsciousness is connected a likewise partly eternal and partly changeable organ for each of the basic energies. Each basic energy organ is unshakably rooted by its eternal part and is one with the superconsciousness. The changeable parts of the above-mentioned basic energy organs are combined in a collaboration by virtue of which the I can elicit the final shaping of its experience of life and manifestation or creation. I have expressed this combination of the organs of the basic energies as the subconsciousness of the living being. Through special eternal organs in the superconsciousness, which I cannot go into here, a seventh basic energy, which I have called the mother energy, is released. From the superconsciousness the mother energy is transmitted to the organs of the basic energies, which it maintains in an eternally changing combination. Through these changing combinations of the basic energies and by virtue of the organs of the basic energies, the I is able to create its manifestation and experience of life. As the basic energies in certain combinations form physical matter and in other combinations form spiritual matter, and matter constitutes the material for creation, the I thus becomes able to create and experience in both physical and spiritual matter. Chapter 14, The Physical and Spiritual Sensory Perception of the Terrestrial Human Being. The basic energies appear in varying degrees of density. The most dense degrees constitute physical matter and the least dense spiritual matter. As the terrestrial human being's sensory perception of spiritual matter is in the main still only latent, while the sensory perception of physical matter is near its culmination, only that part of the structure of the I that is built up of physical matter becomes visible or consciously accessible to the same being. And as the above mentioned part is concentrated in the body of the energy of gravity, that is, the physical body, it is thus only this body with its corresponding physical sensory perception that can be experienced as true reality by the terrestrial human being. As, in relation to this, the five other general organs or bodies of the I still appear for the same being in merely more or less latent forms, its experience of these and the five other planes of existence in question are to a corresponding degree likewise latent. As the physical body is not, however, an independent organ but an organ in the subconsciousness and is therefore connected with this or the other five organs of the basic energies by special centers in the physical brain and nervous system, there arises an interaction between the physical and spiritual experience of the above-mentioned being. Physical existence is thus not purely physical, but is based on this interaction. As physical experience is culminating, while spiritual experience appears only in latent forms to the terrestrial human being, the latter experience becomes totally eclipsed by or fused with the physical. And the individual's realization of his spiritual identity becomes thereby illusory. He believes that everything is physical and that he himself is one with his physical body. Chapter 15, The New Body. As the organs or bodies that appear in the subconsciousness are created realities built up of energy, substance or matter, they are, like all other created realities, subject to obsolescence, wear and tear, mutilation and destruction. When one of these bodies either, in a natural way, becomes obsolete or worn out or, in an unnatural way, is through injury in such a state that it can no longer maintain its interaction with the other bodies, it is released from these. This release is in turn identical with what we call a process of death. When this release is completed and the connection of the concerned body with the I is totally severed, the same body becomes identical with a corpse. Of death processes the terrestrial human being still knows only the one that releases the physical body from the I, and of corpses only the corpse of the physical body. But something similar to a certain degree happens to the other bodies. This separation of bodies occurs according to eternal laws and so can take place only when the body in question becomes unfit for use in the interplay with the other bodies. The I, by virtue of the same laws, becomes thereby able to initiate an incipient building up of a new body of the same matter and in contact with its upward evolution. During this process it thus experiences life by virtue of the other bodies. When the body that is under construction has reached a certain level, the beginning of its mission is realized in the form of a birth process. And the I thereby finds itself reborn once again in the plane of existence in question, but in a new and improved body. The eternal existence of all living beings is thus identical with a continual rebirth into a new and more perfect form of existence on the plane in question. As the terrestrial human being still knows only his physical body and therefore feels one with this, he must of necessity become the victim of the illusion that death is an annihilation of his existence or a total cessation of life. But we have here seen that every living being, thanks to the I and its superconsciousness, is an eternal imperishable reality, that death in the absolute sense is illusory, and that only life exists. Chapter 16, The Return of the Energy. With regard to the superconsciousness, it remains to be pointed out that it appears as a main instigating factor in all formation of fate. What is the formation of fate? It constitutes in the cosmic sense the coming into existence of a living being's experience of the effects of the causes it has itself released. Does the living being then release the causes of his own fate? Yes, absolutely. As no form whatsoever of the experience of life can exist without being identical with an interaction between the emission of energy of the being concerned and the emission of energy of its surroundings, every form of experience will thus be the same as a reception and transmission of energy. As no energy whatsoever can proceed in a straight line but must move in a circle, every transmission of energy will invariably sooner or later come back to its source. The various bodies thus constitute in reality a kind of instrument for the transmission and reception of energies. According to the particular nature of the energies and to the restraints and speedings up to which they have been exposed, the points in time at which they return to their source will vary greatly. In the form of thoughts, manifestations or products, the I, through the superconsciousness, elicits a transmission of the energies. When these return, they manifest themselves in the form of the fate of the individuals in question, and as the individuals have sown, so shall they reap. The terrestrial human being knows only the physical part of this immeasurable play, that is, his physical body and, to a certain degree, its functions. Admittedly, in the most fortunate cases he calls all the remaining functions in his consciousness functions of spirit, but in the majority of cases imagination, and in the less fortunate cases superstition and so on. But the functions of the superconsciousness take their own course independently of this, following eternal laws and paths that invariably allow the living beings to come to experience the effects of the causes they themselves elicited, in order, through this, ultimately to manifest their consciousness as the highest love, wisdom and bliss. With this little insight into the basic analysis of the living being, we have witnessed that it constitutes three unshakable realities, namely that which experiences life, that is the I, the I's creative faculty and the principle of the created, that is its experiences or day consciousness. As we have seen, these three principles are absolutely inseparable. If one of them did not exist, the two others would be an impossibility. And as they each express a specific principle, the cosmic analysis of the living being is expressed as a triune principle. As none of these principles can be identical with the result of creation, the immortality of the living being becomes thereby evident as a fact. Immortality will thus eventually be experienced by every living being and so also by the terrestrial human being, even if it is hidden from his eyes today. With this, we have gone through as much cosmic material as I have considered necessary in order to give the reader the essential basis for understanding the coming explanation of the material fate of terrestrial mankind, its exodus from the animal kingdom and its passage over the border to an elevated, transfigured existence. Chapter 17, The Living Being Has an Eternal Existence. Through the previous chapters, the reader has been given so much insight into the eternal facts or the divine world plan that he has witnessed that every living being is identical with an eternal, imperishable reality. Its imperishability is in turn based on its constitution as an eternal, inseparable interplay between three unshakable principles that differ from everything else in the world by not being identical with the result of creation. It follows that it can never have come into existence and must therefore have existed eternally. As these three principles constitute precisely the three conditions that must be fulfilled by a thing in order that it can appear as living, every living being thus becomes identical with an eternally living thing. This in turn means that the living being constitutes a reality that senses, experiences and manifests in an eternally continuing existence or experience of life. The terrestrial human being has no conscious realization of this eternal existence. Chapter 18, Why the Individual Does Not Remember His Eternal Past. Why does the terrestrial human being not know his eternal past? as not knowing one's past is the same as not being able to remember it. The answer to this question is to be found in the analysis of the faculty to remember. And in the terrestrial human being, this faculty is almost completely at its latent stage in its cosmic cycle. He cannot even remember the beginning of his present physical body and so the beginning of his present physical life. He thus does not know the first years of his life. He cannot possibly remember all the details in his experience of the day before. But since the area for the individual's faculty of memory does not even span his present physical life, but already excludes many years of its first period from his conscious realization, it is simply a matter of course that he does not at all remember events and details that he experienced at a point lying even further back in time. That the individual does not remember his past or his previous lives is thus not a proof that this or these have not existed, but is rather evidence of an inadequate memory. But this of course does not mean that the memory of the terrestrial human being is abnormal. On the contrary, it is in full accordance with the natural laws of the universe. Chapter 19, The brain is not the ultimate seat for sensory perception. As I have said above, the total physical experience of the individual occurs through an interplay of the six bodies of manifestation of the I. Of these, the sixth constitutes that one in which memory has its seat. He must of course understand that memory is definitely not situated in the physical brain, as is generally assumed. It is true that there are centers in the brain for this as well as for all the other spiritual faculties, but these are not in any case whatsoever the ultimate seat for the above-mentioned faculties, but constitute, on the contrary, micro-organs for the transformation or metamorphosis of physical energy into spiritual energy. Spiritual energy is in turn, from a physical point of view, the same as electrical energy. And under this form all physical energy passes into the spiritual bodies, which are all, without exception, of an electrical nature and can be connected to the I only through this nature. That this is indeed the case makes itself known, among other ways, by the fact that all physical sensory organs, such as sight, hearing, sense of smell and so on, are each connected to the brain by a nerve. If this is cut, the physical reaction in the organs take place, that is, the formation of the images on the retina of the eye and the effect of sound on the eardrum and so on still occur, but the individual experiences no sensory perception through the organ in question. As the opposite is most certainly the case when the nerve is not cut, it is thus a fact that the reactions travel in from the organs through the nerve. The nerve is thus identical to a wire for carrying energy. But an energy that can travel along a solid wire can only be of an electrical nature, which, as stated above, in the absolute sense means a spiritual nature. From the organs the physical effects on the senses in the form of electrical waves are carried from the nerves to the brain and from there further transferred to the special spiritual bodies in the total structure of the eye to which they belong. Only then do the reactions turn into the experience of life for the individual. Chapter 20, Memories and the Body of Memory. For its ability to experience the past, the eye has a special organ. This is, as previously mentioned, the sixth body of manifestation. The plane of existence on which this body will one day carry the consciousness for the individual, just as the physical body now carries the consciousness for him on the physical plane of existence, is thus not an outer plane, as is the case with all the other planes of existence, but is constituted on the other hand by the individual's own inner world. This in turn means the area for the individual's collected memories. What are memories? Here I must again refer the reader to Leavitt's book, but I can, nevertheless, say that memories are identical with copies of the individual's experiences. Through the total function of the either situation arises that any experience whatsoever leaves its mark in matter specially designed for the purpose. This mark is thus a perfect copy of the experience in question. These copies will in turn be expressed as details or objects in a particular plane of existence. This plane of existence constitutes the sixth in a spiral zone. And as every contact or connection with this kingdom is felt or experienced by the sufficiently developed individual as bliss, this zone is called the kingdom of bliss. In this kingdom the sixth basic energy or the energy of memory is thus the leading one. the copies or the objects, that is, the memories, in this can therefore not be experienced by means of any body of manifestation whatsoever that is built for the other basic energies but can be directly experienced only by means of the body of memory. While the physical body is at its peak, the body of memory is, on the other hand, almost latent in the terrestrial human being. This means the same as the fact that the aforesaid being in his evolution has reached only the culmination of his faculty to experience in the second plane of existence of his spiral zone, while the culmination of his faculty to experience through the body of memory still lies beyond three planes of existence further ahead in evolution. It is thus understandable that the terrestrial human being, as regards memory, is a latent being and as a consequence of this is not able to make himself conscious of his memories of his previous existences. The same being's self-experienced realization of immortality can therefore at most be expressed only as a beautiful, vague impression, an instinct, a theory or a supposition. But just as he has now, in evolution, reached a plane of existence where the physical body can carry his consciousness, so he will also, in evolution, invariably reach that plane of existence where his body of memory is so developed as to carry his consciousness and can thereby remember, in a fully awake state of consciousness, his passage through and experience of the previous planes of existence. Chapter 21, Why Sleep is Perceived as Unconsciousness. As the body of memory in the terrestrial human being is so inconspicuous, it cannot yet carry out a transference of memories of spiritual experiences to his awake physical realization. This has to a very great extent the effect that the same being becomes the victim of an illusion as to the realization of his spiritual experience when this appears in its total form. What does one understand by a total spiritual experience? It is a state where the awake day consciousness of the individual from being born or maintained by its physical body becomes born by one of its other bodies. When such a transference takes place, the individual loses his physical sensory perception and is unconscious on the physical plane. The strongest form of such a transference for a terrestrial human being is that which takes place when the physical body of the individual is totally and completely separated from the eternal body. Then its state of awakens passes over to the body of feeling, which then temporarily becomes the bearer or maintainer of the individual's awake or conscious perception. But this perception is of course of a spiritual character and therefore of quite another nature than the physical. This transference is identical to what we call death. The transference of consciousness can also take place in milder forms. Such milder forms we know as anesthetization, fainting, trance, hypnosis and the ordinary or natural form of sleep. Here the day consciousness is also transferred to the body of feeling. But as the physical body under these forms of transference of consciousness is not totally separated from the I but is still connected to it, the day consciousness can once again be brought back to the physical body. The individual then wakes up again or becomes conscious on the physical plane. But as the body of memory cannot in a normal way transfer the memories from the experiences in the body of feeling to the day consciousness in the physical body, the same individual cannot in this physical body retrieve any conscious memory or realization of this, his spiritual experience of life. Every form of spiritual existence will therefore be perceived by the terrestrial human being as an unconscious state. Chapter 22, Dreams. It can however happen in circumstances where the transference of the day consciousness to the spiritual state is not entirely perfect and the individual as a consequence of this finds himself in a kind of intermediate stage between physical and spiritual existence, for example, through fever, disease, drugged states or the like, that spiritual memories can merge with physical memories and thereby enter into the individual's awake physical day consciousness. Such fused spiritual and physical memories are expressed in daily existence by the term dreams. Dreams are thus, because of this, their abnormal and uncontrolled appearance, to a corresponding degree unreliable. But to the developed cosmic being, who consciously, or by means of his will, can carry out these transformations of the day consciousness from one body of manifestation to the other, and whose body of memory appears in a somewhat more pronounced constellation to the body of gravity and the body of feeling than that of the terrestrial human being. These spiritual experiences are not dreams but fully awake experiences and thereby conscious facts. Chapter 23. The Bodies of the Eye.